This episode of Football 301, Mr. Forverts, Charles McDonald, joins me to hear from you guys. The biggest offseason question marks. We wanted to hear from you guys about your favorite teams and any lingering questions that you have over the next couple of months. Really great questions. So much fun to dive into. Fun show as always with Chuck. See you guys in a sec. Hello and welcome back to Football 301. I'm your host, Nate Tice. Fun show for you today. It's the offseason. We're a week from the combine, just a few days from the combine when the entire football world goes for the NFL convention in Indianapolis. We just want to hear from you guys. It's been a while. We want to hear, what's your biggest questions for your team? We're doing a quasi mailbag today with one theme, which is the biggest question marks for your favorite team this offseason. I'm sure maybe even you guys had some non-favorite teams you threw out there. Maybe you didn't. I don't know. You guys didn't let me know that. But anyways, to help me do that, Mr. Forverts, Charles McDonald, helping me with the spectrum of blue that we have on this pod. Light blue, the dark blue. Here we are, Chuck. Yeah, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. You know, it's been 40 degrees in New York City this week, so it's one of those times where it, like, 40 feels like 70, you know? Mm-hmm. So I've been outside in very thin stuff, and it feels good until last night. I got caught in a rainstorm just wearing a crew neck, which was unfortunate. I had to walk 10 blocks home in the pouring rain after the gym at night. So, you know, I was really brave about it.
Also, you had the sweat, and the sweat cold too going on. Yes. Oh, as someone that played basketball in Minnesota, that's my least favorite thing ever. Coming out of the gym, you're just covered. You're wearing shorts and a sweatshirt, and you're just like, oh, this sucks.
Covered in sweat and rainwater. But, like, that's when the shower is, like, ultra healing afterwards. Yeah. So I was good by the time I got home, and I survived long enough to answer these mailbag questions, and we're going to get through them because, it's mid-February. We're still in the middle of a draft prep, so perfect time for a little mailbag episode.
It is. Yeah, it's one of those where it's like you also like don't want to like show, you know, I'll just use this phrase, blow our load before the combine and before free agency. I was trying, my brain was trying to think of a different phrase, but I was like, yeah, we're going with it. But really, that's it. I think there's so much fun in free agency. I know everyone's like, oh, this class is down. Guess what? It's the free agency class. That's how it looks like every single year. I don't know why we do this every single year. There's still some fun to talk with it. But then same with the draft. Like, we're going to have some questions about the draft here, but we have a lot of shows to cover, and we're going to deep dive into every position. So it's kind of like, you know, want to titillize you a little bit before we just dive all the way in. But like I said, we're going to dive into a few of those questions we asked on Twitter and Blue Sky. What's the biggest question marks for your team this offseason? Let's dive into them. Chuck, I think the first one was pretty fun from Zoidberg Carl. Great name. Should the Giants take a non-premium position, i.e., Arvell Reese, Caleb Downs, the Ohio State duo, with the top five pick, probably the two best players that'll be available when they're on the clock. Chuck, what do you think? Is that fine taking a non-premium position for where the Giants are at right now?
Well, who else would they take?
Right. Beggars can't be choosers, man.
Right. Well, it's just like you don't want to take a worse player just for the sake of whatever numbers you're looking at.
Need.
Yeah. I mean, this is where like the positional value stuff can get silly sometimes to me, where it's like, really, like if you like Caleb Downs, how many players are better than Caleb Downs in this class? Like to the point where like you start making like positional value decisions and you're not getting close to like the same caliber of player as Caleb Downs or Arvell Reese. But you know, Reese, like I don't even know if that really like the positional value stuff applies to him because.
Right.
Dude, like he could be a pass rusher. You know, he can be a hammer against the run. He can do whatever the hell you want him to do. So I would probably just take Reese if I were them. Not think about it. Keep adding stuff to that front seven. And, you know, if Abdul Carter decides that, like, he wants to start acting a little bit more normal, then that would be a pretty front seven to me. You know, you got Reese, right. Dexter Lawrence, Abdul Carter, still got Brian Burns. Like, you can do a lot right there. And if you have to just throw in like Reese over Carter, then that's fine too. Cause like a world where Abdul Carter ends up being like your third pass rusher, just kind of by like mistake is pretty solid.
Yeah. A pass rush front of Reese, Brian Burns, Dexter Lawrence and Abdul Carter is pretty nasty. Pretty ridiculous what they have. And I mean, even always the forgotten guy Thibodeaux, but we'll see what they have that he kind of seems like the guy on the outs there. You know, Michael McFadden, I believe is a free agent for them this offseason. He's off-ball linebacker. Reese to me too. And I get like we're going to talk about him a ton. I love him. I think he's going to be a top three player for me at worst, probably top two, whether he's off ball linebacker or edge. And to me, it's like he's a front seven defender, and you have to be like just a little bit of creativity to use him. But even a defense that's more traditional, like say Vic Fangio, like how they use Zach Bond is how Reese should be used in the NFL. So it's off ball 60% of the time, something like that. But then he can be on the edge depending on the front when they get to base downs. But that's great versatility because he can be a plus player at both. I think he's awesome. But really, he might be gone by the time the Giants are there. So Downs is the guy, and same kind of discussion. And I also think that fits what they need. And getting a needle moving player that you can feel safe with, quote unquote, safe isn't bad. Safe just like, I think sometimes when people are like, oh, it's a high floor safe pick, they're like, that means it's just a B. It's like, you can have a safe A minus, you know, player that could just be a 92 overall for you for years and years. And I think that's exactly what the Giants need along their spine, like to me, and add some versatility and whatnot to this defense. Yeah, so
I just did a little New Yorkism. I forgot that the Jets have two and the Giants have five, you know. So I was like, yeah, just take Reese. But the Giants have five. Well, okay,
New Yorkism. They all blend together to you.
Yeah, they all look together. G, J, I don't know. MetLife,
they play at MetLife Stadium. Yeah.
Got the soft J sounds. I don't know. It's all the same. Those stink every year.
But your point still stands. It's kind of the same discussion for both teams.
Same discussion.
Yeah.
The one interesting thing I probably find myself disagreeing with people during draft season is like the idea that you have to take Cardinal Tate top five. I don't think so. And that's not anything to like slide on him as a player. Like he's awesome. Like he's a starting wide receiver in the NFL, like easy. But I don't know. He's not I'm biased because I watched the Falcons trade up for Julio Jones and it was worth the picks. It was worth the picks for sure. But like that's the kind of guy that I'm expecting to go top five, and I don't know, he's not that. So also the idea that like wide receiver is a premium enough position that you would need to take him top five is not quite there, especially when you can find these guys just about anywhere. So like I wouldn't really go ahead and take a receiver. I would just keep beefing up like the body types that are harder to find. You know, your giant men that can run really fast, or just like a rare player like Caleb Downs. So like, even if you want to take like an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman, like that's not Arvel Reese, if you can find one that fits there, I think that's okay. Like if Muaga's there at five, that could be an interesting pick for you.
Yeah.
You got Jackson Dart and a whole host of offensive minds that could use all the player support that they can get their hands on. So I think like, even being up offensive line would make sense. And I know Greg Roman, who is now helping run that offense, but not shy away from help on the offensive line.
But what you're saying about receiver too, and that's a great discussion. Like Tate and spoilers, like Denzel Boston are kind of, they're my 1-2 in some order. But to me, those are guys in the teens, you know, that I'm comfortable with. Like I thought Tetro McMillan was a better prospect than both. And that's why I had him as, I think, 3 on my big board last year. I was like, this guy you take in top 10 because that's an X with size and yak. Jeremiah Smith, the Ohio State
Top 5 pick, you know.
That's the dude like that you move up for. The guy that's 6'3", 220 and has, I mean, even if you don't even watch him, if you just looked at his stats, you could just go, oh, yeah, this guy's probably really good. And then you watch him, it's like, oh, yeah, it's this absolute true A-plus player. And that's what this draft kind of is. Like, I think this draft, there's a lot of what I call green prospects in the sense that it's like a lot of good, but not that overwhelming true blue chipper that you have to – you drive up every, you know, trade future draft capital for. I think this draft should be, my advice to a lot of teams would be like, stand pat and just let it fall to you. And just, hey, take this player. Like, because there's going to be a lot of good, but not a lot of overwhelming. A lot of B-plus players that maybe can ascend. And that's what makes it really fun. But I just, not those guys, like, and even the guys that are the blue chippers, it's not the usual positions. Reese, which is still edge. Downs at safety, et cetera, et cetera. Jeremiah Love. At running back, so it's gonna be a wonky draft. There's not a lot of consensus, and that's what makes it really fun. Going on to our next question, I actually like this one too because we talked about this a ton because the Bears became one of our teams that we talked about week in, week out. They were very interesting. Upa Davies, Yuba Davies? Given the Bear, this is their question. Yeah. Given the Bears' problem with interior pass rush and rush defense this season, what should be the priority in free agency and draft? Run stopper in free agency and defensive tackle with pass rush upside in draft or something of that sort? Also, we have another Bears question after that, but we'll get to this one. I know, I think I know what you think on this one, but I'm curious. Bears offseason plans to help their defense. Maybe that's the best way to succinctly put
it. Just like, yeah, if you ever like, if you don't garden before, sometimes like you've got to just go out and just uproot a bunch of weeds before you plant stuff that works. And like, I think wherever they can just purge their defensive line, just gut it, start over. Cause look, you tried last year, hurt my soul, but Grady Jarrett, not the upgrade maybe you thought you were getting. His good moments, few and
that's
far between.
That's why he was on the market.
You know, Grady, he kind of looked like someone who's played 12 NFL seasons, you know, got a lot of mileage on that body. So you're going to have to find an upgrade where you can. Luckily, like, I kind of think, depending on how the combine goes, like, the late first round could be a nice little sweet spot to find a starting defensive tackle.
Yes.
Unless
we find out in our mocks, right? There's like a little D tackle run in the 20s every time. Yeah, every time.
Now, the problem is, like, depending, again, like we said at the start of the show, I don't know who's going to work out. Maybe nobody, maybe everybody, less likely on everybody, closer to nobody. If guys like Cade McDonald and Caleb Banks show out at the combine, that's probably bad for Chicago because those guys are going to shoot up the draft boards. Because when I'm looking at the middle of the draft, I've been looking at it as like, once I get to like, I don't know, past like wherever I have like Sonny Styles on my board, I'm like, I don't really care about too many of these guys. Like, it could be fluid in between there. So
yeah,
like those guys could jump up with a good week. But those are the guys that the kind of guys that I'll be targeting if I was Chicago. Just big, like overwhelming physical presence on the interior because like, you know, just look at your division. You know, Detroit's going to try to run the ball. We saw Kevin Stefanski last year once, you know, the J.J. McCarthy experience was like basically confirmed this is bad. They ran piss out of the ball. And they ran towards
the new O-line coach they hire goes, that's what we're doing. We kind of know what their plan is.
Right. And, you know, like Matt LaFleur wants to run the ball too. So like you have three people in your division that are going to like prioritize the run game. And your run defense was not even close to good enough last year. And I think that would help them probably stabilize on like some of the turnover reliant like need that they had on defense.
Third down reliance.
If you can't stop the run, then you basically have to get turnovers. And luckily they did to help them get to the playoffs. Yep. But we all know that's not a style of football you want to play 2 years in a row. It's probably not going to happen again that you lead the league in turnovers, but it could easily happen again that you get stampeded on the ground. So get some defensive linemen, get some help.
And the good teams, they're not going to overthink it. If we can run on you for 7 yards, we're just going to do it all over and over and find a different way. I mean, it's what the Bears do on the other side with their offense.
Right.
No, but even just looking at expanding from the NFC, because I think the Bears, they're not looking as a fluke. And there's some stuff where people think they're going to regress, but also it's one of these things where everyone uses one score games. And I'm like, well, Bears actually were fine in that. It wasn't like they went like 11-1 and they're going to regress hard. I don't know. It feels weird to me. I feel like they're more going to kind of like stay the same next year record wise, maybe be, but a little bit better in some senses. It's weird. We're gonna have a lot of Bears talks, I'm sure. I'm very interested in what they're doing. No, but I'm right there with you. Like, even if you expand in the NFC, just out even outside the NFC North, look at the NFC West. You got what Seattle does, who are gonna try to run the ball still. You got Shanahan, you got McVay. Like, you got a lot of offenses at the top of the NFC that are gonna try and pound the rock. The Cowboys with what they're building, the Eagles, whatever's going on there, that's what their whole philosophy is. Lane Johnson's returning, by the way. And then even the NFC South. It's just they just get the add on. And the NFC South.
Yeah.
Whatever they're doing
those
down
teams
there.
Over there.
Whatever they're doing down in that division. No, but I think what you're saying, though, it's a great defensive tackle class, and you got kind of some different styles too. Like Peter Woods, I wouldn't call a plugger, more of a dynamic interior guy. Caleb Banks is I would call a mauler. maybe is my best way to put it. McDonald is kind of like the guy I think is perfect for the Bears. Like that from Ohio State, Cade McDonald. Like that is perfect landing spot, perfect with his play style because he's big, he can plug, but he's light feet. I really like McDonald a lot. And it's one of these where Like, that makes a lot of sense for what they need. And that's also sometimes everyone goes, oh, nose tackle, D tackle. Okay, this guy's going to plug the run. Like, Deion Walker for the Bills last year. It's like, no, he's a three-tech gap shooter.
Yeah.
He just looks like a giant plugger. It's not what you think. But even talking about what you were saying with Tate for receivers, that's the thing, too, is you got to look at these draft classes, too, about replacement value at the position, but also replacement value in the draft or when the runs are going to happen. Receivers deep in this class. So why would I take a guy in the top 10 when I can get a pretty dang good player in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s? That's how I view it, especially at receiver. Defensive tackle, too. It's like, I'm curious when the run starts because these guys are all kind of grouped together. And there's like more. Lee Hunter from Texas Tech is really cool. He's a top 30 player for me. But again, he's big, but he's not really a plugger. And I think they need a plugger. Christian Miller from Georgia. That's another good one. He might be more of a second round type. But I would say that what the Bears need, run stopper, is very available in this draft class. Free agency wise, I haven't really looked at the defensive tackle class. Who does?
Free agency has gotten so, it's like there's no one in free agency anymore. Like,
yeah, Terry Turner. So really. Okay, you got DJ Reader. Daquan Jones is interesting, but he's older. John Franklin Myers, but he's more of a hybrid guy. He does a little bit of everything, and he's not like that true plugger type. You're not going to go with Larry Ogunjobi. Yeah, Shelby Harris may be interesting, but he's almost 35. I played with him.
I was saying, yeah, Shelby.
Shelby Harris. Oh, I got a guy in free agency for him. A football 301 favorite, Roy Lopez, who was with the Lions last year and played awesome. Okay, Roy Lopez.
Thomas,
there you go.
Free agent too.
Tonga is too? Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lopez and Tonga. Oh, man. Yeah. Okay. So there's actually some okay guys in free agency. Yeah. Lopez deserves to get paid at some point. Man, he's actually legitimately good. He was keeping their other guys off the field because he was playing so well for the Lions last year. All right. The other Bears question we got was from Nate from Blue Sky. Can Bears survive 2026 without signing or drafting a left tackle? I think they can because they have Ozzie Trapillo. Yeah. Yeah. And I thought he was interesting. He wasn't perfect, but I thought he was interesting at left tackle. And they got the rest of the line. So that's my short answer.
Yeah, you got bigger needs.
Yeah,
I agree. Throw him out there again. See what you can develop and practice and throw him out there again.
I'm right there with you. I think he's got size, light feet, got to work on some oomph. But I like Trapillo. I think he could be something. All right, next question from Nosral. God, guys, can you just go by John? Nosral. All right, Will Brian Daboll challenge Cam Ward to play a more ethical form of quarterback where he goes through progressions and throws towards the intermediate part of the field? Or will he meet him where he is at and just run an RPO offense, which should I hope for as a long-term fan? And there's multiple questions we got about Daboll and Ward's fit. What'd you think about this question?
Okay, I can answer. I have a question back to this person for the first part, because I think it will challenge your assertions about what Brian Daboll actually is. When has Brian Daboll ever gotten a quarterback in the NFL to play ethical, whatever, like this description of ethical football? When has he ever done that? It's never happened for him. Yeah. If you want to give him credit for Josh Allen, okay, I personally would not give him credit for Josh Allen being the quarterback.
I give Josh Allen credit for Josh Allen,
right? But like
his work ethic.
What the last game Josh Allen played looked like? Not clean, right? And Josh, like as great as Josh is, and as much as he's improved, like he's still prone to bounces, like not clean football. And quite honestly, it's kind of what makes him great at the same time too.
Right.
The fact that he will take those ridiculous chances that when they work, like they can win you games. When they don't, you know, everyone thinks you've gone insane for a while.
Ride the lightning, Chuck. That's what I always say. Just ride the lightning. This might suck, but it's fun while it lasts.
Daniel Jones, like at some point towards the end of the Daniel Jones run, Daboll turned Daniel Jones into a straight up wing T quarterback. Like they weren't even really throwing the ball towards the end of it because he couldn't keep him under control. And then with Jackson Dart, Tommy DeVito, like Jackson Dart was out of control last year to the point he got concussion protocol 5 times in one season as a quarterback. Like, come on, man. Getting control of quarterbacks is not really something Brian Daboll has ever done. As much as he like kind of espouses this authoritarian regime in a way, like it's kind of reminds me of Cartman, where you're yelling at people to respect you, but like no one's actually afraid of you, you know? So at the end of the day, you know, they kind of end up playing how they want to, which is not necessarily a bad thing. Like I wouldn't want Cam Ward to lose his edge. Like that's what makes him great as like a prospect and It's what's made him fun as a quarterback of the Titans so far. And I think it's what kind of gives him like the engine to go out there and play against Seattle and have a tough game like he did against them. I do think hopefully, like the one thing I will give if Dable is I think he's pretty solid at like adjusting at times to like the players that he has and also just yeah. like how they're ebbing and flowing through the season. Like the Daniel Jones wing T stuff, I think is a perfect example because like he couldn't throw the ball. Like he wasn't right. effective throwing the ball anymore. So they say, all right, like we're just gonna get you and Tyrone Tracy, we're gonna run this option stuff and we'll have a few drives and then we're gonna need to drop back and it's gonna fall apart. Hopefully with Cam Ward, you get to that point where you drop back and it's okay. But I just don't really think Brian Daboll has all that much to do with that because we've seen enough examples to say his quarterbacks are probably going to be fairly wild, but if he can keep the play calling on the tracks, he'll should be okay.
And in the weird way, Cam too is so different than what Dable's been coaching. Like those guys were such like Cam wants to win from the pocket, and that's actually yeah. what I would actually you say I want to answer a question with a question. Well, I want to answer a question. It's like, how do you think Cam Ward plays? Because Cam Ward actually right. plays a very ethical brand of football. Like it's just
the few plays.
Yes, he gets a little excitable. he gets a little aggressive. I'll put it, but again, I'd rather rein in the wild horse than ask a guy to beg him to push the ball a little bit. I'm gonna say lukewarm. I've been okay with this pairing. I think Dable will streamline it, and I think this is exactly yeah. what you're kind of saying too. He'll streamline it to what Ward's good at. It's just that he won't the easy buttons. Dable kind of falls into. He kind of gets a little. I don't want to say lazy, but it's a little lazy where it's just kind of like, all right, well, this is working. Okay, what's not? Let's just keep doing it. Let's not expand upon like the rest of the stuff that we're doing. Like, we're just going to run the same 3-4-5 RPOs, 3-4-5 slot choice routes. Sometimes that's maybe what they have to do, but who knows? Also, you said that Dable's got that, like, how he carries himself. He got the Titans coaches did presser this week. Did you see any of that? Any of the highlights?
No, I didn't see any of that. No.
A reporter asked him, and it was almost like a plant. Man, you really carry yourself like a head coach. They truly asked Dable this. You really carry yourself like a head coach. And Dable's like, oh, I'm not the head coach. And it reminded me of Simpsons. Lisa Simpson's got a question for Mr. Burns. You got all the momentum of a runaway freight train. It was just a planted question. How are you so popular? And I was like, who just planted that question in there? I don't know. It cracked me up. But I don't hate this. I think it's a better fit than what Nagy would have been with Cam Ward, which was like, oh man, I don't like that at all. I think Cam Ward's really, he's earned kind of my, I won't say respect, but just like I grade him differently now as a pro than maybe in college because I've seen him do some real football, real quarterback stuff from the pocket and how he progresses and stuff. So I'm very encouraged by Cam Ward's film, even if the stats aren't great, because he can do a lot of the hard stuff you want. It's just Dable will be, I think Matt Harmon put it perfect, or the third chair of Football 3-1. He goes, I like this for 2 years. And I was like, yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, 2 years.
After 2027, we're going to be sick of it. For now, it's not bad. And I really like that. It's almost like how Greg Roman is sometimes. It's okay for a year, maybe two. And then you're like, yeah, okay, out.
I just want to say this to Dable. Dable, don't push Cam too hard. This guy punched Jeffrey Simmons. You know, don't push him too hard.
Cam's become one of my favorite personalities in the league, dude.
He will dominate you, dude.
He will. He's confident and like in a good way. Like, and then you see like Simmons loves him. Like Simmons is like, no, we got the guy. Like it's the classic, if you bow back up on the bully, like they're like, oh no, this guy's great. I love him. But your quarterback's doing that. Yeah, that's the good stuff right there. Titans are interesting to me just because they haven't, there's not been any Fs this offseason for them. It's been a lot of, they've been getting on base. And I like that. And I think Cam Ward is a guy that's worthy of, you know, really building around. So I'm excited to see maybe this next step. All right, we're going to take our first break because we got juicy on those couple questions. But we're going to come back with a few more of the biggest offseason questions from you guys. See you in a sec. All right, we are back. We already mentioned Greg Roman. Let's go back to his old team, the Chargers. This is from Clark S. How can the Chargers fix their interior offensive line in one offseason? We've seen the Bears do it, but the guard market is heavily inflated. Welcome to free agency. Not going to get a lot of steals in free agency unless you listen to Football 3-1. We'll talk about some. Replacing 2-3 starters with Zion. But anyways, How do you think Mike McDaniel and Butch Berry, the new offensive line coach, approach it? Do you have any thoughts? Is it draft? Is there anyone free agency grabbed your attention? I have a couple guys, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, right now there's a couple guys. The problem is, like, even in the next few weeks, so much can change for, like, franchise tags go. So,
yes.
Like, because I was saying, like, maybe depending on what happens with Elijah Vera Tucker, if you want to take that swing, another oft-injured offensive lineman for
from the Jets.
I mean, the thing here is, like, if I could fix one charge, one thing for the Chargers, it'd just be the cut injuries off.
That's it. Season.
Because, I mean, they just got bludgeoned this year with stuff.
I know.
But I honestly don't think there is, like, a one-year fix here.
Stopgappy kind of guys, like older guys.
Any one-year fix, I would imagine, involves a trade, like the Bears trading for Jonah Jackson.
And Joe Tooney,
right.
Yeah.
Because when you start looking at, just who is out there in free agency, I mean, it's not anyone here that's going to save you, man. Like, there might be guys who could make it a little bit more stable for a couple games here or there, but I don't think there's a whole lot. I mean, we start looking towards the draft. It's probably where you're probably going to find something a little bit more interesting, but the only first round, like, interior guy that I've seen so far that I like in the first round is the Penn State guard, Vega. Outside of that, I haven't been, like, too inspired by the guys. Like, I think there's some nice day two bodies, but if you're trying to get the one-year fix, like, you're going to probably have to spend a first round and then trade for somebody. Because in free agency, you're probably not going to be happy. And I can't imagine a worse, like, spiritual fit than Elijah Vera Tucker and the Los Angeles Chargers. So stay away from that one.
I know. Maybe they counteract each other.
The second he signs.
I know. He's going to break his finger as he's signing the contract. Like, that's going to break his hand. I know, because that's the thing. Vera Tucker is one of these. I'm sure he's very frustrated, but it's like, when he's out there, he's good. He's legitimately good.
He's eating all these injuries, and he's still good when he plays.
I know. Yeah. He's a true Pro Bowl caliber guy that has tackle versatility, too. But that's the thing. He has yet to stay healthy, and that's going to be his MO. There's a couple he might be too expensive, but I was going to say there's a couple, like the Bills to free agencies, David Edwards, but he's going to get paid. McGovern, the center, that might be interesting. I actually wouldn't hate that because he's a really nice solidifying force for making calls and everything. And he's got good size. He can move a little bit too. Not a bad fit, but he's going to get paid as well. same with Isaac Sumalo from the Steelers, a little older, but one of those guys that, like, when he's out there, he had a really good season last year. The Browns are losing everybody. I'm just trying to find some names. Joel Patino, and Wyatt Teller, but Joel is 34. Wyatt Teller is 31, has been injured, more or less got benched last year. Run first type of guy, maybe not exactly what you want. Because you got McDaniel's kind of made it work with a few different body types at offensive line, like, but they're going to prefer athletes because he wants to pull guys. He wants to get guys out in space. So you kind of have to look for a certain type, which also you can find some nice deals if you nail the right guy. But no, it's a lot of – you're squinting at a lot of these free agents. Like, everybody's going to want Tyler Linderbaum, which would be perfect for this offense, but he's going to go too much. So you're going to be looking at kind of the next set of guys. And maybe you find one that can maybe get you through it. But those are ones that come to my mind. And again, they all just kind of feel a little too expensive. I'm trying to find some name. Ed Ingram's about to get paid. Yeah. And honestly, he tailed off last year. And I'm like, no, avoid, buyer beware. Yeah, man, I really gotta dive into these O-line rankings a little bit more once we can talk about
free agency. Or maybe you don't. And maybe that's the point, you know?
Right. Right.
That's a great point. I know these guys aren't good.
I know. The guys I like are the two Bills guys. Those are two I would go after, but they're going to get $18 million. They're going to get $20 million is the price of a starter now in free agency. Yeah. Like in baseball, they say it's the price of a win. And here in football, it's the price of a starter. And it's basically 18, 19, 20 million. That's what the price of a starting offensive lineman is going to be. So, yeah, I would say those two guys. John Simpson from the Jets.
Yeah.
Maybe. That's what. Also, remember last week we were talking about Clemson offensive lineman. I forgot John Simpson went to Clemson. That's so one.
Two.
No, we'll give you one, Clemson.
One, and then another one coming up.
All right, let's get to the next question. But yeah, no, I I want the Chargers really just stay freaking healthy. You got tackles that are all pro caliber tackles if they stay healthy. So that's a nice start. And they're going to be way out in space in this offense, which will be a lot of fun. But yeah, find some guys, draft a guy on day two. That's how I look at it. All right, next one. We got Jags question. Always fun because it's the unofficial Jags pod. Vaports. Is that Virginia Sports? Vaports. Jags fan here. I know the general focus is on Travis Hunter's usage, ETN and Lloyd as free agents, and a potential BTJ trade. But personally, I'm most interested in how James Gladstone will go about upgrading the D-line to become better at getting home with four and year two with Campanelli. And it's not really a question. It was a kind of a lead on, but I get what they're saying. How maybe would they address the defensive line? Anyone in free agency, anyone in the draft? Do you think the Jags don't have that first round pick with Hunter, et cetera, but anything that they should address maybe defensively?
I mean,
where are they picking?
They're picking the second round, obviously. Like, it's what, bottom of the second round?
I just want to see that. Okay, so they got their second, they got the Lions third rounder, they got their own third rounder, and they got a third round comp. So that was the Tesla trade, I think. So a bunch of third rounders and a second rounder. Any kind of day two D lineman you like? I'll look at some free agents too.
Like, late, what do you look at late second round? I mean, unless guys have character issues, you're probably not going to find like real like impact pass rushers at that point, because they're going to get gobbled up way before pick 56. I think at this point, like, maybe you try to clear up some money or just like move some stuff around. Or could they be like the Trey Hendrickson team, where you just throw them in? Max Crosby team, like. That to me seems like a more stable option than picking than trying to get this done in the draft, because you would realistically have to trade up from 56, or let's say someone gets arrested between here and the start of the draft some unsavory character at 56, like what happened with the Ravens and Mike Green last year, if you want the impact pass rusher late first or late second round, you might have to take a Mike Green. I'm not sure.
Set him up. Well, that one was bad. I was thinking DUI in my head for some reason. I thought of like Dak got DUI week before the draft.
I don't know. You're gonna have to trade. Like, do you want to trade like another first round pick for Max Crosby?
Right.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know. I would try to sign Khalil Mack or Trey Hendrickson or something like that, just because, like I said, it's going to be hard to find someone late in the draft like that. Maybe you just don't have the chances to upgrade your pass rush this year. Sometimes that just happens, and you have to eat it. But at least you're in a good spot in other positions, and maybe you can even make that up if you can find like a cornerback or a linebacker to replace Devin Lloyd, and you can just kind of pass rush together again for one more year.
Yeah. And losing Devin Lloyd is kind of one of those where it's like, if it happens, it happens. Like, don't like be too upset. They did get some nice play of this guy, Danny Strigow. He was undrafted free agent, but he's like a DN type, that can kick inside kind of thing. This is kind of continuing our discussion maybe about the interior defensive tackles earlier. It's that second round is kind of prime for what they want. Maybe Christian Miller again from Georgia might be a nice thing to help out. That's not a pass rusher, but can help out kind of other stuff that they need. I think no matter what, the Jags should address their trenches offensively and defensively. I think if they nail their offensive line this offseason, like the Jags might be an all systems go kind of team, especially in that division. The defense has shown that they can do a lot even without rushing four. I thought the blitz packages were great on pass downs, all that stuff. And you need that. I would actually most want them to have a little more beef on the interior. That's not Eric Armstead, something of that sort. So, I think really just trenches is my answer for the Jacks. Trenches. Like, Travis Hunter is going to be your corner now, so you kind of have that. The receiver room is actually looking okay with BTJ. I mean, BTJ, Parker Washington, Jacoby Myers, and Brent Strange is a great top four for your passing game. And if you got in receiving back with Tootin back there, you know, maybe some beef at running back. Maybe they're an Algier team. You know, actually, ooh, I actually love that. I love Algier for everybody. I'm just going to keep bringing him up until someone freaking signs him. Because I'm like, this guy's so good. He's just not getting hyped up like that. But no, Jags trenches. That's how I look at them. Jags trenches somewhere, some shape or form. All those day two picks they have, just flood it with trenches. Flood the trenches. All right. I want to go. Let's go Denver. I haven't really talked with this, but this is just seems like the only complaint that the Broncos fans constantly have. Ryan asks, what type of skill set or archetype would you like to see Denver add to its skill position group this offseason?
Real big running back. Like, I don't know. like someone who could actually like handle
the Tyler load. Algier.
Tyler Algier. Yeah, exactly. That would be a perfect fit.
Actually, that would be a great fit. That's Mark Ingram.
Right, yeah. Right. For what they already have. Again, someone who can carry more of the load. Like we saw Algier as a rookie. He was one of the better running backs in the league. And then they say, but Bijan Robinson's pretty cool too. And, pretty fun. And I mean, hey, it's been the basis of one of the better running games over the past, you know, handful of years. So, that would really be a great fit. That would be a perfect fit. And I've been running through like this draft running backs list, and I think that's an even more perfect fit because, you know,
I'm trying to find a guy. I love scouting running backs. I really do. It's probably one of my favorite positions. And like Jonah Coleman, I do like from Washington, but like a round three guy, not a guy like. He's borderline the top 50 guy for me, but that's what I mean. That's not like a take him pick 40. You know, they have their first, second, third, but it's all late, you know, so maybe actually Jonah Coleman. But man, we're focused on running back too. I know tight end is not Evan Ingram experiment kind of actually played out how I thought it would. But maybe Kenyon Sadiq, if he falls to you at the end of the first, that would add some real juice. They need guys. Bo Nix is going to attack deep. I think they already have the size for that with Pat Bryant, Cortland Sutton. I really like Pat Bryant. Just stay healthy, please. And even, what's his face? The skinny guy. Why am I blinking on his name? Mims? No, it's not Mims. Mims is the gadget guy. Why am I bringing up? Oh, Troy Franklin from Oregon. Thank you. You know, he's more of a vertical guy and everything. Mims is the gadget guy. You kind of have that filled out. So a guy that can create some yak that's not just Mims. Or like a little bit of speed because of how Bo Nix, you know, he's going to focus on check downs. There's a lot of screens in this offense. So guys that can create a little something that's just not obvious stuff to Mims. Guy that's a little bit more complete. I think there's some day two guys at receiver that makes sense. But I Kenyon Sadiq would be great. It's just that he might be gone before pick 30 for them. So that maybe tight end or running back. I looked to add some more juice and size too. All right, next one. Whew. In numbers four. I'm numbers four. I'm Ron Burgundy. Is the Commanders more surefire path to success in 2026 relying on trying to entirely revamp a historically bad defense in one offseason with minimal draft capital or to add weapons on offense and try to win every shootout?
Whoa, what do you think? Whoa, pal. There's a word in that question that I think doesn't belong, and it's surefire. You don't got a surefire path to nothing, my guy. Like a surefire path to success? Dude, how many games did they win last year?
That
is not something that you should be concerned about. Five games.
They're projected right now at 7.5 wins for next year.
Yeah, that feels
initial
fair.
Win totals. That's fair.
If Jaden Daniels can stay healthy the whole season, I think that feels fair. But surefire, you don't have a surefire path to anything. Certainly not like success. Especially, I think, when you look at where the division is, like Philadelphia is still way more talented than you. Dallas is going to be pretty good. And like the question says, like this is one of the worst defenses I've seen in a while. And like,
they're so sloppy.
They're so, the thing I don't understand is like, man, like this defensive staff has been around for a long time now. Dan Quinn last coached Seattle in 2014. That's 12 years ago. Like that's 13 years, seasons ago. And it's still the same problems. I mean, like, dude, like they can't defend four verts out of cover three. Like that's a high school problem. You know, no. like no
and
one
they
knows
bust on it. They have two guys in the same spots. Like, it's, I know.
Like, no one knows how to do anything or where to go. And I'm just like, man, it's like this every year for every defense. And I think people, they'll point to like the Dallas stuff, like, but not really, because when they ran into Green Bay, what happened? They scored 50 points.
Or the 49ers the 49ers playoffs. Right? Shanahan toyed with him.
Yeah. So, like, I think we're at the point where, like, the truth of the matter is, and this is why I was wary about, like, the hiring. Like, if this is going to be, you know, the head of your defensive infrastructure, it's going to be bad every single time. They're not going to be prepared. They're going to bust coverages. And it doesn't really seem like, at least when Dan was in Atlanta, he had a very coherent, like, logic of like, okay, well, we'll just get like the fastest players we can to run like this simple defense. But he's not even doing that anymore. Like Bobby Wagner and Von Miller, and they got older up front, and it was just bad. It was bad. So I don't think there's any surefire pass success. If I had to pick one of these two options, I would probably say just try to score as many points as you can, because you're gonna need
to. Fun.
Just go for the shootout path, try to get 7 wins, and then get absolutely blasted into outer space in the first round of the playoffs. That's probably your best case.
If it all goes well, yeah.
If it all goes well.
I know. They almost, like, the winning that first year kind of, like, handicapped them more in the future.
Right, yeah.
You know, tons of worked out. I mean, because draft capital-wise, they have their first pick, number 7. Then they have 71, their third rounder. And then they don't pick again until the fifth round. At 145. So they have 3 picks in the top 145. They have one pick in the top 70, you know, and this is a roster that needs a lot of filling out. I mean, they need an outside receiver. They need healthy corners, I would put it. They need linebackers. They need edge rushers. I would say Dorrance Armstrong played really well last year, but then got hurt. That was one nice little find that they've had. But the interior of the defensive line is nice. But again, it's so sloppy behind them that they would make a play. If one of those guys won, like Payne or something, won and got upfield, and he didn't make a play, it was a gash because there's nobody to shore it up on the back end. Bobby Wagner was going rogue sometimes, backdooring some stuff. And I get it, because he just doesn't have the speed. He recognizes some stuff, but then he doesn't have the speed to make up for it. And I get it. Bobby Wagner's a great guy, like a leader, all that stuff. But we have to be realistic where he's at in this day and age. I mean, it's Father Time came up about 3 years ago for him. And so to me, they're actually set up really nice at pick 7. I would prefer, though, they trade back, but they go on. There's no quarterbacks in this draft that someone's going to get really antsy, kind of, you know. And then the offensive linemen look more like teen picks than guys that go in the top 10. We'll see. But pick 7's kind of lined up nice for them, because maybe they get, you know, Bailey from Texas Tech, Reuben Bain from Miami, which I love for this defense. That would help out a lot, because you can play against the run. Like Downs. Those guys. Downs. Oh, Downs would be great. God, but again, how they play defense, Mike. So you're going to use them. Like he's not Thomas. Like Earl Thomas. It's a different style.
Were you going to use him like Earl Thomas?
Yeah, I know. It's like that's the thing, too, is everyone's safeties are on everyone's mind, and Nick Manawari and all that, and Kyle Hamilton. They're not all the same, even if they play safety. Like, they're all like Downs is more like Buda Baker than Hamilton. Like, and he's condensed and he's 6 foot, you know, 198. Hamilton's 6'4" and has arms like a pterodactyl. That's why he plays in the slot like that. And that's why Buda Baker's in the box, because it's just like body type and everything. So I love Downs. Don't get me wrong. But yeah, I think they're set up there, but almost as one of these heart versus head, like my head saying trade back, because they need to fill out the rest of this roster. And this is that type of draft class. So they need a lot. They need a lot. And then they fire Cliff Kingsbury, who actually I was encouraged by what he was doing. Yeah. And they fired Bobby Johnson, who I was encouraged what he was doing. So, okay. All right, Washington. Because there's disagreements on usage of personnel. And there's a lot of...
What personnel?
I know. There's a lot of cooks in that kitchen. And that's what keeps worrying me about Washington. There's a lot of cooks there. And a lot of people with ideas and thoughts. Some of them basketball-oriented. And that gets me worried. When you get other sports infecting in football. Not that I'm against it. I love cross-pollination, but yeah. All right, we're going to take our last break, and then we'll come back with a few more questions from you guys. These have been awesome. See you guys in a sec. We are back, and we're going to get to a couple more questions from you guys. These have been fun. Grand Jordanian from Blue Sky said, are the Pats, the Patriots, in a Sewell or Chase type draft dilemma this year, meaning the infamous draft selection of Ja'Marr Chase or Penei Sewell. There is a longer part of this question talking about watching in the Super Bowl and like having nightmares about it. But is there a way that you lean, Charles, that they should address? Should they keep adding to the offensive line? Should they add a weapon in the draft? They're picking later than I think anyone expected after in this draft class. Might have a couple guys lined up there for them. But what do you think that they should address immediately this offseason, or should be the priority this offseason?
Yeah, you should be doing Sewell. Just like maybe the Bengals should consider Sewell too. But I mean, it's hard to say because Ja'Marr Chase is a Hall of Fame receiver.
Pretty fun.
So it's not like that was like a mistake or anything. The real mistake was I think the Dolphins taking Waddle and not thinking more about potentially trying to get up for a tackle. You know, because
they're moving up for Waddle for
that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So exactly. But I do with May. No, you need linemen. Get linemen. That was your biggest problem in the Super Bowl. You couldn't run the ball, couldn't pass protect. Like beyond the rules being a mess, like you were just getting thrown out the club, and you were getting thrown out the club all offseason too. Like that was your biggest problem. If you have a quarterback that can find Kayshon Booty pinpointed on the back end of a Derek Stingley man coverage for a touchdown, just get some more blockers and address the receiver stuff later. Cause I think your offense is going to be fine as long as he's upright and he's not getting sacked. So lineman.
Yeah. Whether they view Jared Wilson as long-term guard or the center, and it's going to take over for Bradbury, to me, they need a new center. Garrett Bradbury is Garrett Bradbury at this point. And I don't think for a guy that has this many starts at center, he is so average as far as how he sorts everything out, which we saw in the Super Bowl. And again, this offensive staff is what I keep saying, kind of like very missionary position, very like the floor is high with what they run, but it's not exciting. They need players to execute it. That's why it always failed in Vegas when McDaniels didn't have, you know, a real good quarterback and a real good offensive ecosystem. But if you're going to be very traditional, like we just talked about McDaniel, you know, and the Dolphins, they were able to get away with stuff and not having alignment because, you know, because McDaniel's McDaniel. But if you watch these guys that are very traditional, Greg Roman, Doug Marrone, they need the horses because they don't have the imagination and they don't want to have the imagination. Doug Marrone is, I think, almost my dad's age. My dad's not going to change. Doug Marrone's 61. Okay. He's not going to change anything that he's ever done. And you know what? Why I know that? I watched the Super Bowl and he ran some dog ass protections against a defensive coordinator that knew he was going to run some dog ass protections. And he took advantage of it all game long. It still infuriates me that they didn't have any other plan than running the most traditional stuff possible. So to me, okay, if we're going to keep the staff and Vrabel doesn't seem like he's curious to move on from anybody. All right, well, let's get some horses because that's what we need. And to me, that's offensive line. And I think they're already stuck with Bradbury and they think he's fine probably because in meetings he kind of checks all the boxes for Marrone, but they need to upgrade there. Like just talent wise, mentally wise, is, I guess they're going to maybe put more on May to help that out. But I don't know. That to me is it's offensive lineman. If, you know, in this class that might line up for him, it might be more projecty tackles at that point. That might be a reach for an interior guy. You mentioned Vega from Penn State being really the only interior guy you like. I like more interior guys on day two as well. So that might be where you address it. And maybe receiver wise, there might be someone there, but again, you're picking 31. The Sewell or Chase thing, I know that was just more to get to the question that they were pick what, 6-5? That and two guys that are all pro caliber players. Here, you're going to get more green chip guys, as I call them. So, really more BPA, but I do think you need to address it a little bit because it's apparent. Guys weren't getting open against man, and the interior of the line was getting overwhelmed. I like Jared Wilson, but I can tell that he was a rookie. And a guy that didn't play a ton of snaps at Georgia. And I really like him, but I do think that like he might have to be the long-term center because I just don't like what they have. And if he's going to be the long-term center, then you need a guard, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, interior offensive line is where I defer to. Maybe be a Romeo Doubs team. That would be an interesting guy. Something like that. Same that we had more questions about this, about the Pats, but really kind of hit it all right there. I'm going to next one is Ben from Blue Sky. This is a little schematic question I like. Can you explain in detail why McVay pivoted to duo and why that's better to play action off of and what's better for protection? We'll talk about protections after the Super Bowl. Just be real quick. I know I've just been rambling. but why they're going to duo? Zone, if you're booting off zone or play action off zone, you're going to have guys isolated on the outside just by nature of the design and also just the angles of the pocket. If you're going to pass or if you're going to do play action off a zone, the quarterback is going to end up over the guard. Duo is more of a straight play action, and you're able to give more hands to the outside. You can get more hands. You have more options to put hands on guys. So whether you think the edge needs to be shored up, you think the interior needs to be shored up, the action allows guys to attack straight on just like duo. And if you just want like one way to look at the difference in zone and duo, zone is running backs and the offensive line attack horizontally to then go vertically. Duo is they attack vertically to then go horizontally. As far as the running back, because then he's going to go north and then cut off of it, as opposed to a zone. He starts horizontal and then cuts north against the grain. The action of the lineman is the same. So if you boot or play, or not boot, but if you play action off of that, vertical, shore up a hard pocket, a solidified pocket. If you want any example, watch the Rams against the Seahawks in the conference championship game on first and second down, because they did it over and over and over. Ben Johnson and the Bears do it. Really good job of it. But that's why I talked about, hinted at it, being more duo-centric on it is kind of, I think, where you need to go. Because I think zone play action, like the Patriots like to do, is a little off right now.
When I first read the question, and I was like, you know, why McVay pivoted to like duo and play action off duo? I was like, because his quarterback's old as hell, bro.
You know? You can't get him moving.
Right, like you broke down like a more technical explanation than I was. I was like, because his quarterback's old as hell, and you don't want him booting out there against like DeMarcus Lawrence one-on-one and getting absolutely crammed with a bad back. So
that's a good point. Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing is a zone fake, you turn your back completely, and a duo fake, you half turn, and you kind of anyone watching on YouTube, you kind of see what I'm talking about. But yeah, that's the difference too. No, that's a good point though. It's like, because you do those little half boots, and it's like quarterback's got to move.
Yeah, like, gotta run.
You got to get there and get set up, and then you launch. You know, like yeah, it's a great point.
And if that backside D end or something like that stays home, then that's your man. You better get moving, dude.
You know what? You want a great example why the Patriots offense can be frustrating? Watch how much zone fakes they do, even though they're a duo team. It's like fake the fake off the play you do. Like, why aren't you faking off it? Like, they had a boot against the Broncos, and it was like no one affected the edge, and he just got May got sacked on a bootleg, which is a blasphemy for offensive football. But all right, let's keep going. A couple more questions here. Want to do the Sean McDermott one?
Yeah,
Gruley. I think that's his name. Gruley. We'll go with that. Was Sean McDermott really the only thing wrong with Buffalo last year? Chuck, what do you think?
No, he wasn't. I wouldn't even say he was like a problem really last year. I guess it just depends like how much blame you're willing to put for like the players being on the field, like in the first place, like the players you have on the roster, like who is giving up the blame for, you know, the situation that they had in terms of personnel. Cause like those guys were not all that good. And by the end of the season, like they had a respectable defense. Like they had some quality performances. Man, it was just, like to put all the blame on him, I thought was just kind of wild. Cause that is functionally what they've done. They put all the blame on him by promoting Joe Brady to head coach, by keeping Brandon Bean, and by just doing like a minor like shuffling of the coaching staff. You have decided that all of this was Sean McDermott's fault, which, man, I watched that game, okay? I watched that game with my own two eyeballs, and I have not forgotten what I saw in that game. Sure, you got screwed on the one turnover, like the interception that where they were like tussled on the ground a little bit. You got screwed there. You still turned the ball over four more times outside of that. So, like, that's why, like, you know, people are like, oh, you know, they got screwed. I'm like, no, I mean, they did on that one play and that was bad, but you still turned the ball over four other plays. All right. Like, that wasn't Sean's fault, obviously. Like James Cook fumbling the ball. How is that Sean's fault?
Larry Ogunjobi offsides when they recovered a fumble by the Broncos on the first drive.
Right.
That's not McDermott's fault. The guy's on the back.
Larry, I'm about to say, he's old as hell. He knows not to jump offsides.
Yeah.
And I think it's funny. I do think it's funny, though, like what kind of things like get like put on coaches and what don't? Because like Kevin Petullo in Philly is a good example.
Yeah.
The Bears game that they played. I mean, dude, we're watching AJ Brown and Jalen Hurts and Devonta Smith like mess up like stuff that's wide open. Wide open. And then after the game, you hear him chanting fire Petullo. I'm like, you guys don't even have like any bounds to what you just watched. It just got to be this thing that you feel like you need to push when you've watched. Like if I watched a quarterback throw a wide open pass and airmail a receiver, or the receiver drops a wide open pass, how am I going to put that in the OC? Like, these are professional football players. You wouldn't accept that from like a high school player. So why do we do it for like professional players? Like, that's the part that I don't understand all the time. So no, like, this is obviously not all Sean McDermott's fault. I thought that this was one of the more impressive like coaching runs of his career, honestly, given like talent that they had and the amount of young players that they had and how many guys like improved as the season went along. So man, like, that's big shoes to step into for Joe Brady. And again, with the moves that they've made, they whether or not they say it or not, with the moves that they've made, they have made it known they thought this was all Sean's fault. And yep. I think that that's just completely patently ridiculous.
It's been a weird process for them. And they're kind of, like you said, going out of their way to kind of blame it on McDermott. And it's funny because it comes out, the NFLPA report cards, this was a tweet I saw, suggests Bills players have not been happy with a few elements of the organization, training and travel mostly. And they speculated in this tweet, I'm not trying to call them out, perhaps a reason why Pegula and Bean sought a head coach who understands the CEO role. Joe Brady's calling plays. So by default, he's not the CEO because he's calling plays. The CEO role is the guy that does not call plays and has guys that he oversees as a CEO. And also the people that are in charge of training and travel, that's the guy that also got promoted, Brandon Bean, the GM who got kicked upstairs, or not kicked upstairs, got promoted after this offseason. That you mentioned the play that the controversial turnover is, that's the also the underlying issue. Josh Allen was throwing to Brandon Cooks in 2025. That, who's in charge of that again? The guy that got promoted. Yeah, the guy in the receiver room that yells at everybody. So also, you look at this defense, and this is going to lead to another Bills question we got, but you look at their defense. And this is just on our lads. I'm not even looking at other spots, but they mark everyone free agency in green. There are so many free agents on this team, including the two starting offensive linemen that are going to get paid, like I mentioned. So you're replacing your center, who's good, and your second smartest offensive lineman in David Edwards. And I mean that seriously. There's close as David Edwards getting guys lined up at left guard. You're losing your offensive line coach. Pretty fun start on offense. You need a receiver. Okay. And then on defense, Joey Bosa is a free agent. Matt Milano is a free agent. Tre'Davious White are free agents. The fact that you're relying on those guys was one of the issues, but they're all free agents. Daquan Jones, free agent. AJ Epenesa, free agent. Shaq Thompson, free agent. Jordan Poyer, free agent. Damar Hamlin, free agent. Cam Lewis, free agent. Darnell Savage, free agent.
These guys were all playing on defense, though.
Yes, yes. Larry Ogunjobi, free agent. Jordan Phillips, free agent. I know, but that's the issue. Wasn't that like a who's who of their DBs?
I really don't need any of those guys to come back, which is part of the problem in the first place, you know?
Right. Luckily, the guy that actually made that chicken salad out of all that, like, you know, thankfully we kicked him out.
Yeah.
God, so we'll see how this all goes. I know. I love watching Josh Allen. I really do. I like the Bills run game, but it's just like they're doing so much that, like, as an outsider, I'm like, you guys are making a lot of bets on yourselves. You better be right, because I'll know exactly who to point to when this stuff goes south. And that's another question. It was like, are you running mesh because Joe Brady doesn't want to like rock the boat with Josh Allen? Are you running that because the man coverage, no one could beat man coverage, like blah, 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 blah. But that also is underlying issues to how the team makeup is like, and then they promoted the guys that were in charge of that. I don't know. The other Bills question we got, and I like this one a little bit more positively, but this is from Snaves from Blue Sky. How does the current D tackle group fit with Jim Leonard's system, since it's more 3-4 based than the old 4-3 under McDermott? Do you have any thoughts on that? Because I know you got your boy out there, Deion Walker.
Yeah, I don't know. I tend to think this matters less than ever, kind of.
So much, like, hybrid stuff now.
Right, so much hybrid stuff. And Jim's going to run hybrid stuff. It's not like there's no like strict 3-4, 4-3. Like, I think the way you, like, if you're a fan, you should probably be thinking in terms more like especially at the NFL level, where like you see like less tight stuff, like probably just in terms of like four man, five man, three man services, like four man fronts, five man fronts, like because realistically, like old school, like you might have seen like more heavy splits between like a what like a 4-3 under and a classic like 3-4 front, but nowadays, man, all those guys, you got to be able to do a little bit of everything. So I would say like the defensive tackle room will probably be fine. It's just more about how they're deployed and what body types they feel like they need. But man, you got to be in the modern defense, especially like what Leonard's going to call, all those guys got to be able to do a little bit of everything. So I actually think like having someone like Dion Walker is a good start, even though you're going to be,
too, actually.
You're going to be, moving some pieces around as we just listed all those guys for free agency, but you at least got one big guy who can do a couple things up front. That's a good start. And you're just going to have to keep filling that out more. I would be more concerned about more like the edges, maybe more than like your defensive tackle room, because at least you already have one guy in Walker who's giant and can play in multiple spots. The edge room is where I'd be a little bit more concerned about just getting consistent pass rush off the edge.
Yeah, and I love Leonard's stuff. I always say that at Wisconsin. There's a lot of guys that have taken from him. When I was with The Athletic, when I was trying to do my first reporting article, I even went to Madison to interview Leonard. It was because a lot of college teams, including Kirby Smart with Georgia, including Saban with Alabama. Why am I blanking on his name? Dave Aranda from with Baylor, because he was at Wisconsin before too. Was that a lot of the stuff they used was from Leonard. And Leonard's stuff is some Rex Ryan stuff. And now we see it everywhere. And I thought that was kind of, and those Wisconsin defenses were amazing, like top three defenses every single year. And they did a lot of stuff that, I mean, we think offensive line in the NFL and quarterbacks in the NFL get manipulated. You should see what a true attacking NFL defense scheme does to a Big Ten passing game. They would manipulate these guys so bad because all the stuff I brought up, like Fangio, how they use Zach Bond, but all these like simulating creepers, that's all like Rex Ryan Leonard stuff. And so for me, when I look at this defense, I'm glad you brought Walker and Ed Oliver. They actually fit really well because it's attacking. That's the best way to look at the front. A lot of slanting, like the Broncos a little bit last year. A lot of movement, moving parts, guys dropping off, guys come blitzing through the middle, defensive tackles slanting all the way over. So you want guys that are athletic more than just big pluggers. Yeah, it's nice to have a big plugger. A guy that was a great defender, a defense tackle in this defense was Keanu Benton with the Steelers. And if you think of him, he's a mauler, but he slants and mauls. He's not just like plug, two gap, move. So if you want to like a phrase to look at, it's an attacking 3-4 as opposed to a, you know, it's not very, there's not like Dick LeBeau there. It's Rex Ryan.
Not the old Steelers.
It's a different. It's the Ravens. It's the Ravens of the late aughts. That's maybe the best comparison. Or the Jets when Rex Ryan was there. That's what this defense looks like. Not Dick LeBeau. or even some other 3-4s we see out there.
I would say like if you're like a Bills draft fan, like based on that, if you're looking for like one thing to scout for with DTs, I would imagine they draft somebody just for like body.
They have somebody up front. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they got to draft somebody up front. Maybe multiple somebodies up front in this class. Maybe you're looking for someone who's got like the size to go along with the balance, because like one of the worst things that happens sometimes like when you have like those fronts that slant is maybe the guys who aren't as strong, like they slant and they just get caught and
washed
they get
away.
Right down the sideline. Yes. Right? And next thing you know, there's a truck lane hole in the middle of the field.
Yeah.
So, you know, you still want the stoutness, even if you're going to be shifting a lot, because, man, there's nothing worse than when you see like some 270-pound guy slant inside and get caught underneath his pads by the tackle. And he's gone.
Two gaps away. Yeah. It's true, though.
Caleb Banks, that's who you
Caleb
want,
Banks
man.
Is a fun one. Yeah. No, the Bills are actually set up okay for what they need, but it's just, I think they need more than even I am realizing. But even their safeties, though, who I've had issues with, actually fit Leonard better than McDermott. Like Cole Bishop, how he was used at Utah, he was a lot of robber stuff coming down, and that's actually what Leonard will use him as. So actually he fits, even if I'm not a huge fan of Bishop, like that actually fits a little bit better, but it's spine-oriented defense. There's some Fangio here, but it's the linebackers are going to be attacking, coming downhill a lot. So we'll see how they use that. The slot's going to be involved a lot, which is a position.
Might need another corner.
Yeah, they've needed corners a lot. and I will say Leonard really gets the most out of those. That's his background, his DBs. He does get the most out of them, but it's much easier to play a lot of man coverage when you have some talent. When you have Darrell Revis with Rex Ryan with the Jets. Yeah, that's a lot easier to do that stuff. Leonard's, no matter where he ended up, I was excited about it. Here, I was like, okay. But I'm not like, I think he's going to get the most out of these guys. It's just going to feel a lot different. It's going to feel how McDermott felt on third down, just every single down. That's how this is going to feel for them. So, no, I'm optimistic about Leonard. I really am. Let's get a couple more questions here and then we'll wrap this up. Daniel asked, why are the Falcons?
Man, I don't know.
That's it.
That's about all I feel comfortable saying about the Falcons right now until we get some more clarity on some issues that they have going on. So I don't know, man. I don't know. But I know one thing. It sure would have been nice to have that first-round pick right about now. Mm. And you knew that this was a possibility about the player who's in trouble this time last year. So he was pulled off a lot of draft boards, and you spent two first-round picks on him. So
draft boards. And also can't defend a run. Wait, I'm not moving up for a non-quarterback, and I'm also not moving up for a non-quarterback that is limited on 40% of the snaps.
And has character flaws. Because it's funny, you know, you go back through even just like social media, and there's so many clips where like James Pierce is like high school classmates. So like this guy has the worst temper problems like I've ever seen in my entire life. And that's just like on Twitter. So imagine like what like you don't
teams know.
What teams know in the background. And then we obviously see like this horrific incident with Rekaya Jackson. Yeah. And she says she's going to testify. So I don't think there's Falcons fans who are like, oh, well, you know, like, will he? No, he's not going to be on the team.
There's no redeeming answer. There's no argument. Right.
And because the thing here is like there's no area of this whole ordeal where like, oh, well, you know, James was in the wrong 100%. He hit a cop. Yes. He chased his girlfriend. Like,
yes.
Just because he's not off the team now doesn't mean he'll be on the team come August. So just wait. Any roster you're building up for the Falcons that has James Pierce in there, it's wrong. He's gone. Cut it off. They're just waiting for some of the legal proceedings to go on. And why are the Falcons? Because they do stuff like that. The one time that they decide not to draft the goody two shoes, I know what happens.
When I got to Atlanta, man, they and this was 6 years after Vic and the dog charges, and they still were everyone was telling me it's like anyone just even has a sniff of getting arrested, they're off the board. And like I thought they were joking. I was like, seriously, like even when a guy there was like, if they get like a certain amount of parking tickets, we're gonna like look at them in a negative view. I'm like, oh. Well, you need some edge, you know, as I put it. But then it was like Rashid Hageman was who they broke the character stuff for. I know. That was the one guy they broke.
He was good in 2016.
When you could channel him, he had some moments. But yeah, Rashid from Minnesota and stuff. So I know they're never going to go off that. The character reports they're never going to diverge from that ever again. Luckily, they only have – how many draft picks? They have 5 total draft picks, pick 16 in the second round, pick 48 overall, pick 79, pick 114, 196, 232. And I don't think they have a lot of cap space either. And they have quarterback questions. But other than that, looking good in Atlanta. All right, last question here. Mac Mercier. I think I nailed that. Biggest need for the Lions, edge or interior offensive line? What do you think about this? Multiple questions from Lions fans about how they can help the offensive line. So, or should they go O-line or D-line?
I would say interior offensive line for sure. It sucks because I actually don't hate the players of the Browns or the Browns don't have any players on their interior offensive line.
Literally no offensive. Dude, I was tweeting, I have a continuing thread about the Browns O-line, and then like after Wyatt Teller goes, yeah, I'm moving on from them, and a bunch of replies from Browns people going like, well, they had Tevin Jenkins and he's going to be a succession plan. Tevin Jenkins is a free agent as well. And I know, trust me, I know those people listen to the show. I saw you guys delete those replies. I saw it. I saw the original tweets and I saw you guys go, oh, he's a free agent. Delete.
You ain't got nothing to look forward to. If you're a fan of this team, let's just keep it a buck. Like if you're a Browns fan, what are you looking forward to here? You got no money. You got no offensive line. But back to the original question.
I'll be watching a lot of Texas this year.
Going back to the lines, though, it's a fracture of like where the players on the interior offensive line are versus like what they feel like their timeline should be. Because I still don't hate Christian Mahogany. Like, I still kind of like Tate Ravlich and what he's done this year.
He was fine too. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, you just might need to get a little bit better, a little faster to go win that Super Bowl. So, like, I would imagine Tate probably ends up at center, maybe, and then
yeah. They experimented with it last year, and I don't think he had a big background in it, but they experimented for a reason. I think Mahogany too. Yeah.
I would imagine you probably get like one real deal interior upgrade there, which I don't really think is an indictment on the players that they have right now. It's more just like, we need to win a Super Bowl right now because this window's closing.
This feels like the last year of this group. And then it's going to be, I'm with you on that. Going from Glasgow, not Glasgow, Ragnow, who is one of the best centers in the game, to Glasgow, who is okay, but still going from excellent to okay is several tiers difference. And that's also show the importance of having a solidified center to like help everybody else out. When you have a first year starter on either side of guard, I'd much rather have the guy that's like the all pro center kind of shoring everybody up. You also have to think of a Taylor Decker succession plan. And that's kind of where I know Manu, this project they took from Canada, actually had some interesting film last year when he had to play. I'm not perfect, but it's interesting, like where it's like, okay, maybe you don't have to take a tackle in the first round. But that's another thing too, is they have to think of a Decker succession plan because was getting banged up and is just getting older now. So that's where I look at, but there might not just be this might be more of a day two thing for them. If they want to add to center and everything, we just keep coming back to that, more day two guards and centers, not so much first round or top 30 guys. There's no Gray Zabel like that you pick in the late teens and the 20s. I'm like, yeah, I really like that. Or anybody else from that year before. And then defensively, I like the D tackles they got. Like Liam McNeil is a star. He just got banged up. Tyleek Williams is interesting, was the rookie. We'll see, whatever happens with Reader, whatever happens with Roy Lopez. I would say bring back Lopez. Like they have size, but it's just that other DN spot they just can't figure out. Like Muhammad is a good pass rusher, but can kind of wash away. Aiden Hutchinson's average at best against the run. And he's just more of a like a really good pass rusher, can kind of get washed away against size. So maybe a beefy D end, maybe, but I would prefer if you trade back and then do that, but we'll see. They're in an interesting spot, the Lions. There's not like one thing where I'm like, you have to address this, because they have some decent answers at a lot of spots. Maybe more DBs and corners. They can be lined up there because the guys just get hurt. Just how they play, so much man coverage. So maybe there. But they have Reed. They have Terry Arnold. Maybe a slot guy, but they have Branch. But he plays safety for them. Yada, yada, yada. You guys see where I'm going here. They have pads that I could see them addressing, but it's not like anything that's like a glaring deep red alarm bell. It's more just like yellow lights. Maybe that's the best way I could succinctly put it. Wow, Chuck. That was fun.
That was
good. Got through a lot. Well, a lot of teams here. We covered a lot of teams, but thank you guys so much for sending those questions in. A lot of good ones, a lot of fun ones to parse through. I mean, we're getting into the thick of it. We got Combine next week. We're going to start hitting up free agency after that. We'll do a little free agency preview. We'll do a free agency of day of the week one recap on several days during that week. And then we'll get into draft preview deep dives, position by position, which are some of my most favorite shows of the year. But we'll be back next week from the Combine. I'm Nate Tice. You can find me at Nate_Tice on social media. That's Charles McDonald. You can find him at 4Verts on social media as well. And we have a Combine previews. Check that out on Yahoo. But anything you're doing this weekend before the Combine, Chuck, any parting words for the weekend?
No.
And just surviving the weather.
Just surviving the weather, and talk to you next week.
I'll talk to you next week. We'll be
from somewhere in the United States of America.
Somewhere in the United States. Somewhere. Either remotely or in person. We'll figure it out. Yeah. We'll write with you guys. No one knows what we're talking about, but we'll find out next week. But subscribe to us, follow us, rate us 5 stars wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify. Is there another one? I don't know. Any of those spots, rate us 5 stars. Pretty please. Also, throw some comments, some reviews in there. Really appreciate those. That really also fun to look at. Watch us on YouTube on the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. So make sure to like and subscribe there. We have our live shows there. Sunday recaps are done, of course, because there's no more games to be played. But we'll have some stuff coming up over the upcoming weeks as well. But also check out these shows if you're more of a visual learner. Thanks to everyone behind the scenes for making us look and sound good. Thank you all for listening. Have a great weekend and see you guys next week.